Welcome indeed to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols alongside eight-time All-Star. The man still has the hops.
Y'all need to take
Vince
that down.
Carter.
I don't know how to act.
No, we do not. And fellow Tar Heel and 2004 NBA champ Rasheed Wallace, can you still get up like that? Do you still have those hops, Sheed?
Yes. Just more fingertip now. More fingertip.
And the host of the Low Post podcast, Zach Lowe. I know your dunking days are just all in the future, Zach. You just haven't even gotten the chance yet to show people what you have in that bag.
You throw me a Nerf hoop on a door, I'm doing windmill jams, Dominique Wilkins, bring it back up between the legs, the whole thing.
We might need to see that later in the show. We are also going to get into Vince and Sheed's college days. First, though, one of the coolest things about the past week of playoff games has been the return of real, honest-to-goodness crowds in the stands. It has meant a tremendous amount to the players who said the juice in some of these buildings has been off the charts. And it's meant a tremendous amount to so many fans themselves who are finally getting to feel normal again, to have a place to go, to yell and scream and just be with other people. And yet, despite how special it all feels, despite how freshly aware we all are now of how quickly the whole thing can get taken away, the return of full stands has also meant the return of what had been a disturbing trend pre-COVID. Fans verbally and even physically assaulting the players they're supposedly there to watch. Back in 2019, you know, the season before the whole world fell apart, The Athletic reported that the NBA had banned five times as many fans from arenas as it had the season before. And now that the world is slowly putting itself back together, here we are again. There were three NBA games last night, and two of them had fan incidents in New York. Not only did the crowd shower Trae Young with expletives from the moment he stepped on the court for warm-ups, these leaflets were also handed out around the building instructing fans to make fun of Young's hair. Then in the fourth quarter, a fan actually spits on Young, which Young reacted to later on Twitter, calling the incident crazy. Meanwhile, over in Philadelphia, you had Russell Westbrook leaving the court due to an injury. And instead of, God forbid, showing any compassion, a man in the crowd dumped a box of popcorn on his head. Westbrook had to be restrained from going after him by numerous security and team personnel types. And while the fan was identified and ejected from the game, Russ was adamant afterward that more needed to be done.
To be honest, man, I'm not here, especially for me. Just the amount of disrespect, the amount of just fans just doing whatever they want to do. It's just, it's not a problem. But there's certain things that cross the line. And any other setting, I know for a fact that fans, they want to come up, a guy went down the street, pour popcorn on my head. You know what happened? A guy went come up to me, probably asked about my kids, family on the street, because it'd be possibly different. So to get food thrown on top of me, it's just been, to me, it happens to me a lot of times. And you know, obviously, I've learned to kind of look the other way, but to a certain extent, you can't just keep looking the other way. There has to be some penalties or something to put in place where fans can't just come to the game to do and say as they please.
Strong stuff there. And yes, Westbrook has indeed, in particular, been a repeated target of bad behavior. 4 years ago, also in Philadelphia, a fan sitting courtside was ejected for directing a stream of profane words and gestures at Russ. 3 years ago, Russ got into it with a Jazz fan, slapping away the phone. The fan thrust in Westbrook's face. And 2 years ago, another Utah fan was tossed for getting into a verbal altercation with Westbrook while he was sitting on the Thunder bench. Still, this is hardly just about Russ. We have heard from dozens of players that they have faced a sharp uptick in fans believing that buying a ticket gives them the right to do and say anything toward the players they are supposedly there to see. The problem has gotten bad enough that this morning the NBA released a statement noting how respect for the game is, quote, critical, and said that an enhanced fan code of conduct will be vigorously enforced in order to ensure a safe and respectful environment for all involved. We will find out what vigorously enforced actually means in the weeks ahead, although we're starting to get a hint. The Knicks announced this afternoon that the fan who spit on Trey has been, quote, indefinitely banned from Madison Square Garden. And the Sixers have said the same about the fan who dumped the popcorn on Russ being banned indefinitely from their arena. Will the threat of that be enough to make other fans behave better? Personally, I had hoped that after a year without getting to go to sporting events, fans would just, appreciate how fortunate we all are to be back and have such an essential part return to the game we love. And surely a big chunk of them are. But clearly, there do need to be harsh penalties toward the fans who keep crossing the line, because this has gone way beyond classless. It has gotten nasty and dangerous, and players should not have to put up with it anymore. And look, guys, it's also not new. Rashid, I know you had plenty of fan interactions in your days, and some of them were fun, right? Right. Some of them, you get into a fan, it's kind of fun, but I'm sure some crossed the line. And what was your reaction to seeing these interactions last night?
Well, when I was playing, it was more, you know, fans just talking junk, which was fine with me. Long as you were talking about me, keep it with me. Don't talk about, at the time I was married, don't talk about my wife, my kids, my mom, or, you know, nothing personal like that. I could deal you talking junk about me. But, I mean, if the, for these fans who are disrespecting these players, the guy who disrespected Russ pouring popcorn, the other gentleman spitting on Trey, what if we come to y'all jobs? What if we come to y'all jobs and heckle y'all? What if we come to y'all and spit on y'all, pour drinks as, on y'all as y'all going back and forth to the fax machine or to the bathroom? You know, y'all wouldn't like that then. This is our job. So we understand that each fan is very passionate about their team. But, yo, you got to don't cross the line, yo. You know, keep it, as they say, a good, safe family environment. Because what if Trae Young would have went on into the stands, hauled off, and, you know, right socked the guy in the face? Now, Trae Young's the bad guy. He's getting to blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, they definitely need to get a grip on that now.
I agree with you, Shee. I agree with what Russ said, because if that gentleman who spit on Trae or poured the popcorn on Russ was outside of that arena, it's a different result.
We know how that would
end. We know how that ends up. And here's my thing. With the league and the people who are implementing these rules, put yourself in that position. Let's say if that popcorn was poured on you, or courtside Karen, or you're spit on, how would you react? How would you react if that happened to you? And then you think about this rule and say, okay, you know, this rule is good to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And Zach, I wanted to know from a league perspective, we saw what the Knicks did, we saw what the Sixers did. What more do you think the league can do than just say, hey, if you get into it with a player in an unsafe way, not just this game you're getting thrown out, but you will never, ever be able to come back. Is there more you think the league can do, or that's really the answer?
Yeah, I don't know what else really they can do. I mean, never ever is a pretty harsh standard, and I think that you have to do something pretty bad to get never ever. But look, like, this isn't really that hard. You would think that a year of living in a plague would make people a little more empathetic and nicer and more sympathetic to each other and not, like, meaner and nastier in real life on social media and all that. But, like, this isn't that hard. Don't, you know, we all know where the line is. You all know where the line is in your day-to-day interactions. What's funny, what's clever, and what's verbally over the line. And what's definitely over the line is, like, anything that you have that can move from you to the court or to a player, whether it's an object or saliva or whatever. Yeah, like, just don't do that. That's over the, it's really not that hard. Like, just don't do that.
Well, Vince, you had an object thrown at you once, right?
I did in the Olympics where we were in Australia and walking down the court, and all of a sudden you hear kink, tink, tink, a coin was thrown at me. So, you know, my one thing is that the fan does this and they feel like there's no consequence. There should be a consequence. He was able to walk out on his own accord.
Yeah.
All right, you're out of here, go. And then, but yet, you're holding Russell Westbrook back. You know, Trae Young, if he runs in there, like Sheed said, you're holding them back, but he was able to walk out. He wasn't arrested. He wasn't carried out. He should have been removed with force. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. And you set an example, because once you set an example, everybody else is like, I don't know if that, I want that to be me.
I think never ever is the example. I know right now they're just saying indefinitely, and that leaves room for in a year or 2 years or whenever it is to let that person back in. I think never ever is okay, because I think that is what would tell fans, don't do this, don't have this be you. I remember when LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, as members of the Heat, came back to Cleveland for the first time after LeBron LeBron left the Cavaliers the first time, they had batteries thrown at them. Yeah. I mean, that is just not acceptable, this kind of stuff. And I do think that there has been a rise since sort of social media and Twitter culture where, to Russ's point and Vince, to your point, you know, you would not say these things to people on the street if you saw them in person. And yet people feel perfectly comfortable tweeting threats at players.
And you don't know if their boys are sitting right there in the building. You think this is cool, ha, ha, ha. You turn around and, you get thrown on the court, all right, by the boys.
And, Sheed, you have seen in person what happens when it becomes too much. Obviously, in a game against you guys was the game that Ron Artest went into the stands. And, I was in the building that night. And I feel for those guys, for Steven Jackson, because they were just trying to protect themselves from stuff being hurled at them. And once things start to get out of hand, then they get even more out of hand. And then it becomes unacceptable for the entire NBA. So it is a really, really, really just, there is a line cannot be crossed anymore. Let's talk about basketball. I'm so angry about all of this. Much more cheerfully, some great hoop at Madison Square Garden last night. The Knicks were on the ropes at halftime, down 13. But Tibbs started Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson in the second half and did not look back. Rose ended up with 26 points in 39 minutes. The Knicks allowed a raucous MSG crowd to celebrate that series-tying win. Rose was appreciative of the moment post-game.
I've been dreaming about this moment for a long time. In the past, people said I couldn't play the minutes. They was worried about it, but I knew all along how much hard work I put into it. Like I said, I'd be on my feet for 2 hours. So you tell me I can't play like 30 minutes in a game with the way that I changed, the way that I played. So I'm happy with my endurance. I'm happy that we got the win tonight too. Took a lot out of it.
So awesome to see. And Vince, you are someone who aged very well in this league.
Yes.
Can Rose maintain a near 40-minute workload as the series continues?
Well, the good thing about it for D. Rose in the playoffs is that you get time in between.
Yeah.
And he's going to take care of his body. He's proven that, and he's learned ways to take care of himself. And they need him to be in the starting lineup to get a fast start, particularly now going on the road. Mm-hmm. Both teams are evenly matched, and you can see implementing him into the second half starting unit opened the game up for Julius Randle.
Yep.
Julius Randle was now able to get his game going, knock down big threes, make plays, and they win the game when they were down 15. So he can rest later, and I think he understands that.
My inclination, even though what Vince said about 2 days off between games, always a day off between games in the playoffs, my first inclination was, I don't believe that all these sports scientists and all these people have been wrong about Derrick Rose and the danger of him playing so many minutes. But to hear Derrick speak on it like that after the game and say, hey, I know my endurance, I know my body, it gives me some confidence that maybe he's got more of these games in him than we think. I mean, it's his body. I think I should trust him more than anyone else. That said, it's going to be interesting to monitor. And if they do start him over Elfrid Payton, the very important question for the Knicks is, what happens when Derrick Rose is on the bench, assuming Payton's out of the rotation? Can Quickly and Burks and maybe a more dose of Julius Randle in those minutes, is that enough offensive creativity? Last night it was, and I think that was the right move for Tibbs.
And I definitely have to cheer for my man D. Rose. You know, he's an NBA veteran.
Yeah.
I'm cheering for all veterans. And again, to piggyback off of with Vince Tick, he knows how to take care of his body. He hasn't been around this long being foolish and not doing the things that he's supposed to do to take care of his moneymaker, which is his body. So, for sure, tip my hat to D. Rose in the game you had last night, good brother. It definitely uplifted the team, and for the good Knicks fans,
yes.
they were crazy. It was so loud in there, and I see Spike was over on the sideline dancing and everything. So it was good to see basketball back to basketball again, and everyone into it and cheering for those guys. So definitely they deserve that win last night, and it's going to be a good series. As you mentioned, it's 1-1 now and heading back down there to Atlanta. So we'll see how the Hawks will bounce back.
I mean, there was a point in the coronavirus pandemic where we didn't know when or how we would ever get that slice of normalcy back. And to see Madison Square Garden cooking. Just felt like everything had come home. The thing about Derrick Rose to remember, guys, I know he's had all these injuries over the years. He's only 32 years old. Sheed, as you were aging in this game, I asked Vince earlier, but for you, was there anything that you had to reduce in the couple years before you retired and you had to change the way that you played?
Oh, it's definitely, first and foremost, is your diet. You know, as you get older, when you're younger and you're playing all those minutes, you can eat and drink whatever, you know what I'm saying? Because you know you're going to run it off in practice.
Yeah.
But as you get older and become that veteran, you know, you change your diet up and you start to do a whole lot more things with your body, more stretching and taking care of more massages because, you know, again, that's your moneymaker. So long as you do that stretch and take care of your body, you're good. And God forbid, you know, avoid any injuries.
That is absolutely the case. Yep. We're going to get to that whole Chiefs ensemble that you've got on a little bit later in the show. Coming up, we're also going to talk Donovan Mitchell returned with a flourish to the Jazz. Game 2, that win last night. Our guys will grade his performance. Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Dell. I'm Rachel Nichols, once again with Zach Lowe, and just a couple guys who played at Chapel Hill, Vince Carter, Rasheed Wallace. Now, Rasheed, you were at UNC from 93 to 95. Vince came in from 95 to 98. But did you guys cross paths, like, on a recruiting trip or summer workouts or anything?
All of the above, really.
Yeah.
I definitely remember Rasheed in high school. He obviously older, and I took my visit there and of course, played pickup with them on my visit and got a chance to watch them play. And I'll tell you this. Once I committed, I was praying. Of course, you know, you want these guys to go pro if they want to. I was praying that you and Stack stay because if you don't, touche, Jeff McGinnis, I'll play the two, Stack at the three, Antoine Jameson at the four, and you at the five.
Wow.
Think about that. That's college. Yeah,
that.
Sheed, what do you remember about young Vince?
Well, you know, in the hood, we call them dummies. Like, when you can jump real high just for no reason, we call them dummies. And so, like, Vince had mad dummies. Like, he jumped out the building. And to me, his dunks at Carolina was way more better than mine. So he was actually flying. And I also got to give it to my Carolina brethren. He do got one of the coolest basketball nicknames out there, half man, half amazing. So, I mean, bro, you got that. To me, that's up there with the human highlight.
Right.
So, you know, that's killer nicknames in the league, good brother. And, hey, it's a Carolina thing.
Yeah, and I want to say this, you know, as when I was in college and when she and all the guys would come back, one of the guys who I hung with the most was this guy.
Yeah.
You know, we'd ride around Chapel Hill. She, you remember this, listen to Wu-Tang Forever.
That, remember? Yep, going to grab a grub.
Go all the time.
Hitting Sutton.
Yeah.
Mama did.
I mean, just spitting game and, you know, on how to be a Carolina guy and what the league was like and just preparation. And that's what Carolina's basketball guys would do. And that's why we're hated, I guess. I don't know. Talked about because of the brotherhood. But that's just how it was. And when you walk into Carolina, that's just – it just becomes a part of you, and he was a big reason why I became who I am as a veteran going back for young guys because of what he did for me.
No, Carolina is definitely one of those schools, and there's a few of them, though, where even guys who didn't play together, that connection is so deep, and then I see the way y'all help each other in the NBA as well.
You should see our group chat.
It's pretty incredible,
We have a group chat.
Feel free to bring that group chat on the show sometime. I don't know how much it's suitable
for television. I mean, it's a wide range of the younger guys. Up to Big Smooth, the older guys. We're all in a group chat. Everybody keeps together. Yeah, it's about 50 to 55 guys.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to have to get into that in a different show or maybe off the air. I want to look at today's magic moment brought to you by Walt Disney World Resort. After missing more than a month because of that right ankle sprain, Donovan Mitchell looked like himself last night. Such a great sight to see, dropping a team-high 25 points in 26 minutes. Here he is after the game talking about how he felt. Take a listen.
I feel good. You know, I've put myself in, you know, kind of treacherous situations to come back and be ready for, you know, playoff intensity, and, you know, felt better than I anticipated. And, you know, just as a whole, I think the biggest thing as a team, we just did a lot of good things tonight. You know, I think Mike had 15 assists tonight, like the man 20 and 15, Rudy had 21 and 13. Like, we did a lot of really good things. So it made my job, you know, easier. I didn't have to come in and just do everything. Like, you know, I was able to just kind of find my spots and attack and just and kind of just do what I do. And my teammates made it really easy for me.
All right, Zach, if you had to assign a grade for Donnie Mitch and his return after missing the previous 17 games, what would it be?
There's only one answer to this question. A plus, and if you want to put an extra plus on it, put an extra plus on it. He moved well. He shot pretty well from three. He got to the rim. He looked athletic. He defended pretty well. What's not to like about this? The guy was out for a while, a long time, actually. There was a little kerfuffle about whether he should have played game one and whether he wanted to play game one. Everything was absolutely perfect for game two. He looked great. You couldn't ask for anything else.
Well, no, it was definitely a great game that he played last night. And as you see, the injury is not there. And he went out full-fledged because as that player, when you're coming back from being injured, you know, you don't want to go too hard, but you get caught up in the excitement and the rush of the game. So, you know, he definitely paced himself pretty well. And you've seen in times of the game on fast breaks, he definitely used that, you know, speed burst. But it wasn't the full, you know, speed that we've seen to Donovan, but damn, it was still great to me.
I mean, missing 40 games, he gets an A plus what he's done.
Games, yeah,
yeah. 40 days, right. Yep. 40 days, 17 games,
yep.
And then come back and play like that, you get an A plus, Donovan Mitchell, first and foremost. But he was prepared for it, and he had every right to be upset because, like he said, I prepared for it. And he did one thing right here. You see this video. This is a dead ball. He got a shot up anyway, and he got to see the ball go in.
Yeah.
And then that was his actual really? First shot. Yep. And she, you know this, when you're going that long, you're excited, your adrenaline rush. Like, his first game back is the playoff game, game two, which they needed him to play. And you know that first shot can be, you can hit the flag on the backboard, you can hit Jerry West, it could be an air ball, it could be something. But he got a shot up to see it go in, to get that scope right. So when he got that first shot, he knocked it down and he took off from there.
Sheed, you got a pick for the rest of this series, Memphis, Utah? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, with the return of Donovan, the way it looked, I don't know. They might ride that wave because he's playing phenomenal. But I can't count out the young fella. You know, Ja is playing, yes, has always been playing good ball to me since he came into the league. But I think that's one of the better series that we're seeing now, especially on that West Coast.
Really, really fun. 47 from Ja last night. And you don't expect this from a 1-8, but we are getting it. And Donovan will have a couple days to rest that ankle now. They don't play again until Saturday. All right, Sheed, thank you so much for being here.
Got
we got to get you on with Perk next time so you can really have an NFL fan standoff. We'll work on that.
Nice shirt, though.
Exactly.
Always and forever like Heat Wave. Rach, appreciate it.
Boom. All right, everyone else stick with us because coming up, we're going to talk about the Lakers-Suns series. LeBron appears to be shooting from further away than usual in this series. We will explain to you why next on The Jump. Welcome back to The Jump presented by Dell. We have a huge game tonight right across the street here at Staples Center. After the Suns held serve in their game one on Sunday, the Lakers took back home court in game two behind 34 points from Anthony Davis. So, Vince, I want you to break down a little tape for here. What was something you noticed from the Lakers that changed from game one to game two that they can continue tonight?
Well, the thing that I noticed is how AD handled the double team. And he took his time. Typically, when you're doubling a superstar early in the game like they did, you want to take them out of rhythm in the beginning of the game so they don't have a flow late in the game. And I've had some experience with that playing against the Knicks in the playoffs. And you see here on the catch, the double team, and they made me rush. They made me play faster than I want to, and I threw the ball out of bounds. And I'm like, T-Mac, at least try to catch it. And here I'm rushing. I'm trying to beat the double team and get a shot up and just not in rhythm. And here I go up. I think I have a layup, triple team. I get my shot blocked. So there, Oakley is telling me, take your time. So I listen, and the next year I get some help. And now we have Chris Childs. I'm under control. They put me at the top of the key, and I was able to work a little bit better and knock down some shots because I was now in rhythm because they couldn't double team me because of all the help. You see, they're in rhythm, the quick cross to the fadeaway. Now we're going to see the same thing with AD. Here's the double team. He's worried about
his,
in game one. He's worried about the defender. And it did not see the double team. So they started to speed him up and then throwing the ball all the way around. So there's the frustration. So now the adjustment in game two, put him at the top of the key, put him in action, put the ball in his hand. Now here's the key. He sets a great screen. The reason I'm saying this is how you want to get yourself going, get you a little guy, mouse in the house. And then the mouse, he jumps on top of the screen. Big mistake, young fella. AD 6'10", and he sees a driving lane, and Bridges is thinking, yes, I have the help, but the help is too late.
Yeah.
Once a star like that sees the ball going in, he can get rolling, and I think that's what got him going and got the Lakers going, i.e. LeBron James as well. He didn't shoot. I mean, he didn't get in the paint like we're going to talk about, but he didn't have to because AD demanded the ball in the paint, which got all of the defenders in the paint. And, I mean, shoot the ball, LeBron. He's been shooting the ball well, and that's what was happening.
And, look, this is how it's supposed to work, right? Anthony Davis is the younger star. So as LeBron ages and perhaps is hurt a little more often just because he has a human body and that's how it works, Anthony Davis is supposed to be picking up
and he played a 9 or 10 finals in a row.
Bulk of things. Zach, how has that sort of relationship worked, especially because LeBron is really cut down taking shots in the interior? Only 3 of 16 shots were in the lane in Game 2. What do you think of that approach offensively? Is it injury related, and are you concerned at all?
I would assume it is injury related, and we saw a little bit more of LeBron getting into the post and playing a little bit of bully ball in Game 2, which makes me think he's saving that kind of stuff for when he really needs it, for when their backs are against the wall. We've seen that from him before, but Warriors game, Game 1, Game 2, his post-up game hasn't been there, his lift hasn't been there, and he just makes it work anyway because he's so good and he's such a basketball genius and he has a tag team partner on AD's level. But we're talking about a team that doesn't just want to squeak out a first-round win. We're talking about the defending champions that want to win 4 playoff series. And to get through 4 playoff series, even though 3 of them are in a Western Conference that now looks more wide open than ever before, they're going to need a little bit more of the bully ball, inside out, passing, rampaging to the rim LeBron than we've seen so far in the playoffs. And look, he hasn't shown it so far, but his history suggests it's going to be there when they need it. We'll see.
Now, it's going to be interesting in Game 3 tonight. We will keep an eye on all of that. You know, I asked Frank Vogel before Game 1, are you seeing LeBron making those micro decisions in game that we saw, say, Kawhi Leonard making in 2019 in that run for them? And he said, indeed, we are, and we will see more of that as the series goes on. Coming up, Ja Morant had a scoring run this week that only one player in the 1940s can tout. Something, nothing, or everything? That's next up on The Jump. The Jazz won their 56th game last night. That means, including preseason, regular season, postseason, Utah is giving away a scholarship. They vowed one for every win, a full 4-year scholarship for an underrepresented student of color. They've already handed out 30 of these, starting in the fall of 2021, covered the full cost of attendance to any of the 6 state schools in Utah. The remaining scholarships will be awarded for the 22-23 school year. This is the best. Every team should be doing this.
That's so dope.
Time for a round of one of our favorite games here at The Jump. Shout out Kevin Wild. Something, nothing, or everything. Let's start with Ja Morant because he dropped 47 on the Jazz last night. That 47, the most in any game in Grizzlies history and the most by any player age 21 or younger in the NBA in postseason history. And we've had a lot of very good players age 21 or younger in the playoffs. Ja has scored 73 total points over his first 2 career playoff games, second most in NBA history behind George Mikan. So Vince, did not expect a George Mikan reference
exactly
on today's show. Are these numbers from Ja something, nothing, or everything?
I think this is everything because if he doesn't play to the level that he's playing, where would the Grizzlies be? You know, would they still be in the playoffs? I don't know. But when he's playing at this level, Dylan Brooks playing like he's playing, I mean, who would have thought they would? It's 1-1 right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you think, from the playing game.
Yeah, from the playing game on, it's just like these guys are playing what we would consider above their heads.
Yeah.
I don't think they really, do you realize that, you know, I would say, do you guys realize that you're playing in the playoffs and you're the 8th seed? It's not supposed to look like this. And they're making it look easy and they're a confident bunch going back to Memphis. Uh-oh.
Zach, I don't know how many of those youngsters even know who George Mikan is, but you do. Is it something, nothing, or everything?
It's everything. Look, the Grizzlies are probably not going to win this series, but they're not trying to win this series in the scheme of things. In the scheme of things, they're trying to win the championship during Ja Morant's prime. And you know what? Ja Morant is telling everyone right now, I'm a guy that can do it in the playoffs. I'm not afraid of the big stage. I'm not afraid of Rudy Gobert, even if he throws my dunk attempt back. I'm going to lift my teammates up around me. I'm going to empower my teammates, and I'm going to take them with me on this journey. He is totally unafraid of the moment. I love the way he plays. I love his style of play. He's not selfish. He's not a ball hog. He's pass first at times. He's cut first at times. He's trying hard on defense, so he needs to get better on that end. So this, to me, him sort of declaring, I'm here. I belong here. I belong on the biggest stage. And, yeah, I'm a star on the biggest stage, too. That's everything.
And I can guarantee you this. You're going to see him try Rudy Gobert again.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
He is not afraid
of anyone. He did later
anyone.
In the game.
of anyone. Remember, this is the guy who talked trash to James Harden, like, in his first month or two in
and
the
Steph
league.
And Steph and all these guys. Like, yeah, like...
Yeah.
It's not supposed to go that way. But
this man is not afraid. I want to move on to Ben Simmons, who was aggressive on the offensive end in game two. He led all the Sixers with 15 shots at 22 points, tied Joel Embiid for the most on the team last night. He's also averaging a triple-double for this series so far. Zach, was this game two performance from Ben something, nothing, or everything?
If it carries over into the later rounds against better opponents, it's everything, because this is the Ben Simmons the Sixers need to get out of the East and have a chance at winning the championship. And I loved this series as sort of a warm-up for him, because Washington plays three guards a lot of the time. They're guarding him with Russell Westbrook or Bradley Beal when Bradley Beal is stuck in that matchup. And that's just tailor-made for Ben Simmons to say, I'm bigger than you, I'm stronger than you, I'm not afraid to get fouled, even though I was 0-for-6 from the line in game one and didn't take any in game two. Let's just put that aside. I'm going to the rim, and you're going to have to send help, and I'm going to kick to my shooters, or I'm going to finish, because I'm going to make sure I'm a threat to score and not someone who's just in the way, sitting in the dunker spot, cluttering up Joel's post-ups in the half court. That Ben Simmons is a franchise-level player who can help lead the Sixers to the promised land. And that's, so it's definitely something, if it persists, could be everything.
Yes, I think it's something for those reasons you just said, Zach. I mean, if he's aggressive, he makes Philadelphia even harder to guard. Yes, he's an elite passer, but if he's getting in the paint like that, he's creating those open jump shots that, you know, Philly, obviously all the attention goes to Embiid, but now two stars doing that, he's playing like that. Look out. So, I mean, they're supposed to take care of business. And I think they want to take care of business, get Washington out of there to prepare themselves for the next round.
Yeah, and remember, earning that first seed was so important for them because the other big boys in the conference, whether it ends up being Milwaukee or Brooklyn, they'll have to play each other if they both get advance here, whereas Philadelphia will only have to play one of those if they advance. All right, here's what the Jeb recommends for today. A guy we know named Zach Lowe. Ever heard of him? Penned a piece on how the Bucks have been feasting on the Heat on games one and two of this series. You can check that out, then come back and we'll tell you how the Heat could get back in this series on the other side of the break. Watch out for Miami.
Did you boo Zach Lowe?
Zach Lowe booed Zach Lowe. Chris Middleton taking game one at the last second. Then the Bucks ran away with game two. So, Zach, how does Miami get back in this series tonight?
The first thing is Jimmy Butler. It's got to be Jimmy Butler. He was way too quiet in game two after missing a lot of shots in game one. If that means taking a few mid-range jumpers and making a few mid-range jumpers, then that's what it takes. Bam Adebayo, he's been given a ton of space by Brook Lopez. Take some mid-rangers, rev up and get to the line. If you have a post-up mismatch, go brute force and dunk on somebody. They need their two best players to combine for, I don't know, 50 points, 55 points, and then they have a shot.
Yeah, and look, Jimmy has said he wants to come out as a different player. He had so many high points this season. It will be interesting to see what he can replicate in this game. Now, a guy who has aged well is an understatement. We showed you earlier this week, Vince, on our hoop. So today he came out. This is 21 makes in a row, and not from close range. This is insane, Vince Carter.
Got to move this hoop. Got to get rid of it. If I'm coming back, this hoop can't be here. I can't help myself.
Are you kidding?
I see rim, I see ball, I don't shoot it.
So I think this is amazing because so many people think of your dunks. You have made the sixth most threes in NBA history. And Zach Lowe, I don't know if you caught this earlier in the show, but we're putting all your water polo highlights up next time, too.
The man,
oh,
Zach.
Stop.
That photo is amazing.